There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along. And as always, phone line and text line open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. As I mentioned at the end of last hour, joining me from half a world away, but Alabamian, the smartest guy in our friend group growing up, students at the University of Alabama, like he was a smart guy, the default guy. You got a math question, you got a science question, yeah. You would ask my buddy Jeff Toxie, and it's worked out. He is head of geologic studies at Qatar Energy and geoscientist at ExxonMobil. He is in Doha. Well, I'm going to say it here. Hey, Jeff, is it Qatar, Doha, Qatar, or Qatar, or what is it?
So, very good question. Short answer is the English language speaking voice box is not trained to make the noise that's the actual name. I'll do my best. It's Qatar.
Qatar.
So you kind of have to jam your tongue in the back. But I've heard people call it Qatar and Qatar. And when people try to make the noise, it ends up sounding like gutter. But it is Qatar, if you want to say it like an Arabic Qatar speaker.
Okay.
But Qatar or Qatar, either one is fine.
Because I heard the gutter thing. Listen, you're from Tuscaloosa County, man. If you can do it, I can. I'm from Mobile County. I can do it, too. Roll Tide, brother. Good to talk to you. So I'm watching, I mentioned the folks last hour. So I'm watching your video on Facebook, and it's, y'all, we see the videos been coming in of what happened yesterday coming in Doha. And I saw those videos, you know, they're shown on national TV. And then I realized here's videos from Jeff from like you were in the backyard or something. Where were you? I mean, were you at the house where you're taking those videos?
So a good buddy of mine that I work with, he's actually going to be repatriating this weekend. His family had left on a plane yesterday morning, and then they were packing up, and he had some things that he wasn't going to be able to pack, like beer and unopened liquor bottles. So I was over there helping him out.
Oh, good.
And so this was actually a compound, you know, a gated community would be the term. Mm-hmm. But it, essentially, that's where we used to live when I was here with my whole family. My boys are back going to school in the U.S. My wife just went back last weekend to, you know, for basically summer leave because it gets hot as blazes here and there's nothing to do. But so I was on that compound. And to give a reference point, because I thought it might come up, from where I was in that compound to where the Al-Udeid air base was, where the missiles were being fired at, is about the distance if you were standing on the USS Alabama mm-hmm. looking straight at Fairhope. That's 25
wow.
kilometers away.
Wow. So, I mean, it's, yeah, but I'm thinking that, I mean, to think from Fairhope to the Mighty 8, that's not far. I mean, that's,
no.
I mean, that's right. Could you hear, so we see your video, can you, you hear the concussion of the anti-missile defense hitting the missiles? And what does that sound like, if you can?
Yeah, so the first thing that we heard was all the guys that were packing up the house went outside and were poking around. And we were just sitting in the backyard having a couple of beers. And then we heard sirens, and that's unusual. They don't have a civil defense, like, air raid siren system for Doha. But they do have them at the base. And because we were so close, we actually started hearing the sirens from the base. And then we heard a couple of pops and then some thuds. And it just sounded like a sack of potatoes hitting the ground. And
was that
so
the
we
missiles
kind of all
hitting,
looked at each
was,
other. And
was that the missiles then hitting the ground that had been shot down? What was making the thud?
No, the thud was just the pressure wave that was coming. So it's like thunder. It was a short pop, and so that thump, when the explosion to detonate the incoming, that was what we were hearing.
Okay, so you're hearing that, then you're look. Then there's the visual, right? I mean, which is from your videos when we've seen that's something. It's a heck of a fireworks show. And you also, in true language I would understand, Jeff told me during the news break, he said, yeah, Sean, it's like being at the skeet range, but being downrange at the skeet range, right?
Absolutely. You know they're not aiming at you. They were aiming for the base. But when you're not catching the missiles, you're blowing them up in the air before they get to you. So all that shrapnel and debris is falling somewhere. And luckily, we weren't over the direct flight path, but we were very close. So if something would have detonated high enough, it could have ricocheted or, headed in our direction. So, of course, we're standing out there looking up, recording with our phones and drinking beer. So, we were having a good time.
Ain't much changed, even with you half a world away. But I do want to ask, Jeff, I want to ask this, though. With April and the kids back in the States, it's just you there, but this is such a wishy-washy question, but this is what I do for a living. What does that feel like? Being like, they're shooting at the base. They're not shooting at you, but I'm going to project here. You don't know that they then couldn't turn to shoot where you are or miss the base. I mean, there had to be some sort of kind of heaviness to that.
There was, I don't want to get give the impression that, we're all being unsafe and flippant. But you've known me long enough. Mm-hmm. I tend to handle stress by cracking jokes.
Yeah.
So there was a little bit of that, a little bit of a dark humor that was going on. We're just watching it. And because the guy was there, his wife and family were actually on a plane over the Atlantic, and they luckily had Wi-Fi. So I had April and the boys in Houston. I had my family in Alabama, me and him here in Doha, his wife and kids on a plane over the Atlantic, and we're all texting and sending videos, and it's like so you kind of took your mind off of it a bit. But when you sit there and you're looking up, you're like, if one of those goes squirrely, mm-hmm. it's going to end poorly.
Yes. I mean, that's real. That's sobering for sure. I don't care how many craft beers you got in you.
I think we had about three at that point.
You're starting to get there. What's the reaction on, like, and it's, 9 o'clock there where you are, right? 9 o'clock your time?
Yep.
So you had a day after to, what is it like? I mean, have you gone outside, work in the house? I mean, what's it like in Doha? What's the local police? I mean, is there any kind of reaction there? Is the city, a buzz? What is it like?
Honestly, so not much has changed. There's definitely some electricity in the air. People mm-hmm. are like, what's going on next? Because, you guys are probably getting as much or more information about what the status of the ceasefire is, because I think the Iranians were throwing over a big barrage of missiles, overwhelmed the Israelis. Israelis started shooting back. They said you violated the ceasefire, back and forth. And so, we're all kind of amped up a little bit, like, what's going on, But much like, so as a reference, I don't know how much you've seen about it, the Iranians actually sent a nice text to the Qataris and said, it's not you, it's us. We're just shooting at the Americans. We don't have a beef with you guys. We're cool. The Qataris, and a lot of the culture here is about saving face and, projecting strength. And so the Qataris are like, our civil defense shot down all the missiles and everything's fine. Our beloved country was violated. And so there's a little bit of bluster, but it was pretty clear because Qatar Airways, which is, it's a major hub in Doha, they actually closed the airspace about an hour or two before the barrage.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. So we saw that back here stateside yesterday. As I was coming on the air yesterday, I saw airspace had been closed over Qatar, and then, then it was other places. But I said they must have – that was before the missiles flew. Like, did they give them a heads up?
100%.
Okay.
And that's kind of the, you know, that's the belief here, and it really all ties together. The air base was more or less evacuated. There's a very small footprint of people. Clearly, they still had some assets and, you know, countermeasures in place. But the aircraft that are normally stationed there have been sort of dispersed, as you would when you're expecting something. And so the Iranians had sort of, they didn't try to overwhelm the base defenses. They only, I think the total number of missiles they counted, I've seen anywhere between 16 and 19. That's not a huge barrage. It makes a point. But because they closed the airspace, at one point there's this little food delivery service here called Talabat. They closed that down for 30 minutes during the barrage. And then after everything was over, yeah, they opened it back up. Everybody go back to work. We'll see you in the morning, et cetera, et cetera. So it was pretty low key for, you know, a missile attack.
I mean, so they shut DoorDash down for just about an hour, and then...
And that truly is where I thought things were really going to go sideways. If you want to disrupt life in Doha, you shut down Talabat. That's how everybody gets their stuff.
You're not, so, no, that's not... Here you are a world away, and half a world away from us, and people getting their food delivered there too in Doha?
Buddy, my son went to the beach one time, forgot sunscreen. They ordered it on Talabat. The guy drove it out to the beach for him.
Wow. I mean, I get the wealth there. I do. I mean, I've watched it from afar. I don't get it as somebody who's been there like you. But just that, you know, just kind of some of those, I guess, conveniences or whatever, that's part of the culture there, just like it is in the States.
Yeah, even more so. They're very hierarchical, very status-oriented. You know, little bit. There's about just a shade over 2 million people in Qatar. There's only about 350,000, 400,000 Qataris total. And all that money that comes in from all the oil and gas, mostly gas, levels of wealth that are absurd beyond belief. And, yeah, so... I live in an apartment block. I routinely have to dodge Lamborghinis, Ferraris, Rolls Royces when I'm driving into work because they just have them here like candy.
And then, you look at some of the things over there that I've seen, the cars and then the, I think it was in Saudi, they're doing it. Are they doing it or do they have an indoor ski slope? Like it's indoor and they're making snow or something like that?
Yeah, I believe that is at a mall in Saudi, yes.
So. The old indoor. I mean, heck with the ice skating rink like they used to have in Montgomery and Birmingham. I mean, they got a slope. So going forward, business as usual for y'all or anything changes going, you know, we're in the ceasefire now. What are y'all doing at work?
So I have an oddball setup where, as you mentioned, I'm employed officially by ExxonMobil, but I'm seconded to Qatar Energy, which is the national oil company here. It's all part of the, you know, integration with the, one of the major projects. So, and they, as you might imagine, Qatar Energy has its own HR policies and whatnot, and then ExxonMobil has the way it, you know, it handles things. So in general, ExxonMobil is being very communicative about threats. They're interfacing with, you know, U.S. and other security firms. And, you know, we get routine updates about, okay, do you need to work from home? Do you need to shelter in place? They have an evacuation plan for staff. Right now, they've activated what they call a temporary, voluntary, dependent relocation. So if your family wants to bug out, company will do it for them. They haven't started evacuating working staff, but we just had a meeting this afternoon, and they just gave us an update and said, you know, we're monitoring it. We noticed that during the missile strikes, some of the plans we had in place didn't work out great. We're going to adjust those, and you know, so they're monitoring it. We feel like we're being taken care of. I get probably as much communication from the expat wives WhatsApp group. They're pretty well informed, and so, but you know, we're keeping in touch, keeping informed.
Well, I'm glad you're safe. It was a new perspective to see. Honestly, I mean, I'd seen. Back here stateside, we'd seen so many videos of it, but to see it from my buddy, taking it just, I don't know, it made it way more real to see that, know that somebody I knew that was underneath that. So I appreciate seeing that on there, giving it some context.
Yeah, you know, and you know, when you're here, something like this is happening. Huge outreach, you know, friends that I, you know, don't keep in contact with regularly, reaching out, hey, we're thinking of you, what's going on there, you know, hey, you know, hope you're okay, if you need to bug out, you know, you can stay with us. So it was, you know, it was nice to sort of activate that community, but, you know, it's nice to be thought of.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it definitely creates a different perspective being in the line of fire, because, you know, it really becomes real. You're like, wow, I'm here, and this is happening, and you got to deal with it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you've lived, it's not exactly like you've been living in Pasadena the whole time. You lived in some exotic places before this, but, you know, they hadn't been missiles coming in.
Yeah, this is really the first one. My family and I were actually on vacation in Beirut a few years ago. I think it was in 2019. Yeah, it was just before COVID. And we were supposed to go out to a winery, and well, they, you know, kicked up, had a bunch of riots, but they were after the government. They were just upset. They weren't after, you know, any of us. We were driving around literal dumpster fires, and, you know, my oldest son had said, look, when the Lebanese start to get spun up, that's when it's real, because those guys have dealt with a lot. Yeah. But we were able to get out of there, and, you know, we stayed at the hotel and got to the airport, no problem. But, yeah, so not my first rodeo, but the first one that involves high explosives.
That's for sure. Jeff, I'm so happy you're safe. Good that the family is back stateside, and hopefully this ceasefire holds, and it's nothing but, you know, just BSing on the Facebook from now on, and not this stuff.
Yep, inshallah.
Well, yes, that's right. I know that word from listening to Books on Tape. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah.
Be safe, and get your butt back here stateside. We got some beers to drink.
Thank you, sir. Glad to call. Glad to talk to you.
There he is, Jeff Toxie, which, like I said, the smartest guy in our friend group at the University of Alabama. It shows now, right, in what he's doing and his experience from yesterday with the missile attack in Doha. All right, coming right back, more Midday Mobile. Grab your text already coming in at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 127 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And heads up, too, if you've been thinking about getting around to it, doing what I did for years, say, I'm going to get a silencer. I'm going to do it. And then I started the process online. It took forever. And then I had to go get my fingerprints one place, didn't get over there. You have to go somewhere else to get a passport photo to go with. It was quite a scene, and I didn't get it done. And my buddy Jeff Stone from Stone Arms heard me lamenting about it. Maybe I'll use another word, but lamenting about it. And he said, hey, come by the shop. And he said, I got a new kiosk in here, and you can get it all done online right here at the shop. I said, okay, I'm interested. So he set this up, and all you do is stop on in. You go into the shop, and this online kiosk takes you through the process of getting your silencer. And it's like, do this, go to next. Even if you have a problem with it, somebody from the shop, Jeff or somebody else there, can help you with it. Took me 20 minutes, sent it off 2 weeks later, got the green light. And the beauty is, silencers in stock. He's got a huge assortment of silencers and rifles and pistols to put silencers on. Some of those rifles too from ATAC Defense, they're out of Loosedale. They're making fantastic rifles. Shout out to those folks. They're and just right across the state line. They're good folks. Those rifles in stock, and really gunsmith department that can work on anything. But that kiosk, maybe the first thing, if you've been thinking about getting a silencer, go check them out. They're just west of Snow on Airport Boulevard. They're online at stonearmsinc.com. Go see Jeff and the crew today. Okay, to the text here quickly. Yes, I did. So myself, he said, and your buddy who's in harm's way, and the third thing y'all say to each other is Roll Tide. Well, we're both graduates of the University of Alabama, so yeah, Roll Tide. Let's see. Matt says, ask Jeff what he's driving. Yeah, I don't know. He could probably drive something nice as long as he's been in that field, but probably not as much as some of the Qataris that he's around with, the Lamborghinis and Ferraris. What's important about that is we've all seen the video and seen the attack on the airbase there in Doha. But to have one of my buddies who's, you know, like he said, the distance from the battleship over to Fairhope away from there in his gated community where he lives as they were drinking beers and watching it. He's a guy I've known for decades and decades and decades. His recounting of it meant a lot to me. Yeah, there's people from right here that are in harm's way with the military and people that are working in the oil and gas business. They're there right now. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. It's up here. My buddy, Blaine Price, he's at Paris Tractor in Robertsdale, and he just said, you're thinking skid steers. He's got those. You got excavators in as well. What do you got in stock?
Yeah, Sean. So right now we've got all the Kubota, full line of Kubota skid steers and mini excavators in stock, whether it be open cabs, enclosed cabs, high flow or standard flow with all the attachments right now. And of course, we're still doing the zero interest financing through Kubota right now as well.
Okay. On the skid steers, you know, I like them, a fan of the high flows. I mean, this is, I know you can do work with the others, but high flows and the attachments, you can, I mean, it's amazing what you can do with these things.
That's right. And we've got all those different attachments, whether it be pallet forks, grapples, brush cutters, augers, buckets, you know, a little bit of everything. We've got that in stock right now. If it's something that you're not looking at purchasing, you might have just a one-off project or, you know, a couple projects coming up that you could use one. Can't justify spending that much on a brand new one. We've got used ones in stock as well, as long our rental fleet as well. We have, you can rent it for a day, a weekend, a week, a month, whatever the case may be. We'll work with you there. You don't have to be a large commercial guy to rent from us. We've got a little bit of everything in our rental department. We rent a lot to just homeowners. So come by, see us, check us out, see what we have.
Even talk show host.
That's right.
tell people how to find you.
We're right here at Paris Tractor in the middle of Robertsdale on Highway 59. Come by, see us Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Saturdays, 8 till noon. You can give us a call at 251-947-4171 and visit us online at paristractor.com.
Hey, thank you, Blaine.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, there goes Blaine Price at Paris Tractor. And yeah, and appreciate the text more people chiming in. Yes, that my buddy Jeff Toxie and I did a second or third order in of our conversation about his experience in Doha yesterday was to roll tide each other. Listen, we both graduates of the University of Alabama. That's what we do. All right. Great to have. I had this man on last week, and to have him back on is important right now. It's a great way to get some more perspective. You can read his work over at 1819news.com. He's a contributor there. Also, Army veteran and a man who likes terms like, well, he talks a lot about Machiavelli and realpolitik, so you knew I'd like him from the get-go. Troy Carrico joining us now. Troy, thanks for your time.
Hey, it's my long-lost brother.
That's right.
My Machiavellian brother, man.
That's right.
So dropped that on me when we were in there, and I got so tickled with that. I'm glad somebody else knows what the prince is. But how you doing today, Sean?
I'm good. I wonder how the prince would feel about the move from President Trump here and where we are over the last 48 hours till hopefully, fingers crossed, the ceasefire stays in place. Your thoughts on that? How was this played?
Well, the first thing I want to make sure when I need the caveat, when someone says hopefully, whenever you're in a military briefing and they're giving that, you know, operations order, they say, and then we hope that this will, and I've had commanders say, stop right there. Hope.
You dropped out. You said hope what? What did the commander say? Hope what?
So I when I was with Rangers, and this actually came down from, I think it was Pershing who coined this. When an operations order is getting put together and he's getting briefed, and they'll say, and then, sir, we'll move. Hopefully the 6th Armored Division will be in position to flank here. And he stood up. He said, stop right there. Hope is no strategy for victory.
There you go.
So preparation is. But so it's a good question. And I think the prince would say, should we say, yeah, the prince, the Shah, the son of the Shah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's trying to make a power play here.
Yes.
Yeah, but the thing is this. Look, I I am mixed. I have mixed feelings about this. I think the door has been left open specifically by the Israelis, by the Americans, when they give the offer for the ceasefire. Because I'm going to be honest, I don't see anywhere in this equation where you have a truly successful operation unless you destabilize that regime and you remove the theocracy from Iran. It's that simple. That has to be an end state. So, in my opinion,
really, walling them off, just saying, listen, y'all, don't enrich uranium, and we can get into that. Don't enrich uranium. Don't sponsor proxy terrorist groups, and then y'all do your thing. If you want to subjugate your own people, go ahead. I mean, just do your thing, and we'll do our thing.
Right, and the problem with that is we haven't been able to actually get those bona fides from them. The fact of the matter is they have been pursuing this enrichment program to a point where, in my honest, and I'm only speculating here, but I've worked heavily with strategic intelligence. I can tell you that Israel acted when it did because it was approaching a point, a terminal velocity, in my opinion. So unless they just had a deal with Trump and, let's do this. But again, I don't see a world where you can continue to allow the IRGC to lick its wounds, recover, and come back strengthened. And we know they are not going – they've made it very clear. They're head of their agency, atomic agency. We are not stopping the pursuit of enrichment of uranium and nuclear weapons. So, that you have to Trump is perplexed in ways and almost hypnotized by making deals, and that's good and well. Sometimes the best deal is what is AKV, as we call it, butt-kicking violence on the objective. And the thing is this, I'm not advocating occupation. I'm simply saying they continue to come back with plans from Europe, come back from plans from Oman about, hey, they've agreed to 1 year of moratorium on enrichment, then 2 years you can do periodic inspections. No, there's no more discussions over that.
No,
there will be
yeah.
no enrichment of uranium. And that's really the problem I've got. I don't think people are fully embrace that yet.
Yeah, and we can go through this. I mean, we've seen it before with IAEA,
yeah.
whatever, those guys. The inspection service, in the past, other countries and Iran, it's been like, well, you can, come look at these places. And you don't get to look at everything. Like, go look at, it's like, come in here, my bedroom's clean. Now, don't go look in the, don't go look in the den, but the, look at this bedroom, how clean it, no, you can't go in, that door's closed, but go, this room's clean. I mean, that's, I do feel that that kind of hustle gets
it does,
done.
It does. And so I worked for Scott Ritter's, that Scott Ritter that you see in the news, the Putin file, Scott Ritter, former Marine, head of the International Atomic Agency, Energy Agency. I worked for the ISG, which was the Iraqi Survey Group, back after 2000. What, I was there in 2004 and 5 as an ISG badge and credentialed agent, and I was flying all over Iraq looking for weapons of mass destruction. Had a suitcase full of money. We had an incentives locker room full of. What do you want? You want whores, drugs, weapons? We can give you whatever
really?
You want as long as you give us intelligence and what we're looking for. We never found anything, but that's a different story.
What was the most popular?
We talked about that the last time.
Yeah, I just wondered what we didn't get to get in detail last time. What was the most popular item in the incentives drawer or room? What did they?
That's a great question. It's a tie between heroin and Blue Label Johnny Walker.
Huh. Opens doors, a little heroin and some top shelf.
We had cocaine.
Scotch.
Wait, listen, I'm not joking, brother. We had whatever your vice was, we were able to provide that. And all we got in return almost every time was something called red mercury. Red mercury is nothing more than U-232 from a fire detector or a smoke detector. But we were giving stuff out, and we never found it. We did. I can't say this officially, but we did find something in Lake Tharthar, but it was not nuclear related. It was just chemical. So we'll leave it at that. But my thoughts are, I've been around that kind of environment of playing heck cat and mouse in a different environment. But organizations like the IAEA, organizations like the UN inspection teams, they're not going to get the real deal. They're going to get a dog and pony show. And it, Sean, I don't see any reality outcomes here that's not good, that could be successful unless it involves a complete regime change.
Okay, so what do you think for on the pragmatic side here? Any idea, any of your channels letting us know any damage? Did we do any significant damage to their enrichment program?
I thought, yes. I went to Oryx. I'm a member of the Open Source Intelligence Consortium. Anybody that has a .mil address still can access it through Pegasus. And if any of your listeners want to know, you got my contact info. Just get them in touch with me, and I'll help them through that process. But it's very clear that the damage that was done in Fordow was very thorough. There were two direct hits on top. There was one hit. There were two hits that were directly above the enrichment uranium halls, and then two more rounds put down inside of there, which is going to give you near almost 400 feet of penetration through that type of surface. I can't imagine it not doing damage. Now, I noticed that Vance tweeted today, well, we still think that they have uranium enrichment stockpiles and capabilities. I think leaving the door open for more strikes is really what that's about.
Yeah, and I'm not savvy enough to know what we should expect, but I was wondering if you were successful and they had that uranium there, should there be a radiation signature afterwards?
Absolutely. So the reason, that's a great question, and let me explain how this works. So I worked on a mission in 2008 in Pakistan during the floods, and CIA came to me. I was then the G2 chief of intelligence for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Winchester, Virginia, for the Transatlantic Division, and we handled all military construction over in Southwest Asia and CENTCOM and that whole AO. And I was very close. I was on the Human Intelligence Committee as an auxiliary member, and one of my CIA people came to me and said, "Hey, we got a proposal. We would like to partner with you when you go into to Pakistan and monitor the floods and help them with the dams." What they did is they brought us these hollowed out sections of jersey barriers that had snippers. They were electronic snippers on them.
Oh, wow.
And we set them up outside the bases where we knew there were nuclear weapons.
Smart.
To help as part of the flood mitigation, right, on the roads. And we were able to track every weapon when it went by. It blew my mind. It was probably one of the coolest things that I supported in mission support, is that they had these devices that were multispectral that could detect the movement of that stuff on the road right by it. Now, if you want to magnify it, in the air we have several platforms. I won't discuss the numerical numbers on them, but that's classified. But there are several dozens of platforms that are multispectral, and we call that ELINT and MASINT, Measurements and Signatures Intelligence, and Electronics Emissions Intelligence. That also includes chemical range and the wide spectrum of multispectral detection. So, yes, we know where it's at. We know how much they've got. We know what the status of it is. How far
that should be the most important information, right? If it, the day before the strikes it was X, and now it's X plus whatever, like it's leaking or something like that. That would be to be the barometer of how effective the strikes were.
I agree, and I think the one thing that you've got to consider is there is obviously emissions coming out of the impact site, but it's probably 300-400 feet down. And the thing is, I'm not really worried about contamination. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I am not an expert on NBC, nuclear biological chemical, but I did have a pro mask in the Army, so I know a little bit about it. But the thing is, my thoughts are, had it not been successful, we would have saw another series of strikes. Now, here's the thing. This is a kicker. Here's the kicker, Sean. The GBU-57 is the MOP is, we only have, I believe, 30 or 31 of them in our inventory. We expended 12. Those are designed specifically for China, for destroying their C5 4SRI, which is their communications, their intelligence, their command, all that, bunkers. Because another mission I worked on that which tells you what's going on, so you got an idea about targets. When I got to Iraq with the Iraqi survey group, we came across this material. It was a dark obsidian, dense, like it was three times heavier than concrete, four times heavier than concrete for its size. And it was black, jet black. It had little specks in it. And that was fragments of the bunkers we were knocking out in Iraq. Huh. Well, come to find out, we sent it off to a lab for exploitation, material exploitation. Came back that it was ultra-high performance UHP concrete, which is silica blast replacing sand, little pellets of silica displaced out the sand in the mix of the concrete and makes it this dense, airless. I mean, it's, I'll give you an idea. Normal concrete PSI, anywhere from 7,500 to 12,500 PSI. This stuff was coming in like at 80,000 PSI.
Wow.
So it really woke our eye. You know, we really realized, hey, normal JDAMs and munitions are not always going to knock this stuff out. So same thing applies here. But I do believe that based upon our assessments and what I'm seeing on open source, is that it was actually more damaging than they had originally thought was the last that I had seen. But they left the door open, didn't they? They left the door open that, hey, we still think they got, you know, potentiality out there.
We're coming right back. Bohr with Fort Carrico right here on Midday Mobile. After him telling me about the full supply, here's how my mind works. Full supply of JDAMs and how many we use, then maybe it's time for me to buy some Boeing stock. We'll see. I mean, I didn't ever think I'd say that, but we'll see how they're trending during the news break. Be right back. To 153 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Text line and phone line for you at 343-0106. Yeah, that's phone number. Somebody's been that way for 16 plus years. I'll remember it. 343-0106. Our guest, Army veteran, and that's just the tip of the iceberg for Troy Carrico, our guest right now. I could go and throw this out and say, you know, don't let perfect be the enemy of good or something like that. But you think that what has been done here is not enough to turn things around with Iran?
My gut instinct tells me, based upon what I know about the MOIS, which is the intelligence service of Iran, and what I know about the IRGC, and what I know about the Quds Corps, what I know about, listen, they specifically left, if you notice in the targeting decks, everybody killed was IRGC or Quds Force or MOIS, not regular Iranian Army, Navy, or Air Force. Let me tell you a little secret, dirty secret. There is a huge disconnect between the Revolutionary Guards and the regular Army and regular military of Iran.
Is it like Wehrmacht and SS? I mean, was it like the Wehrmacht and the SS in Germany?
Exactly. It's like the Wehrmacht versus the Waffen-SS. You know, the Waffen-SS has got King Tigers, Tiger IIs, And the rest of them just got the Panzer 1s and 2s and 3s. Mm-hmm. There is a disparate amount of funding that goes into the preservation of the revolution and of the theocracy versus the regular guardians of Iran. And I can tell you this. Why would they leave intact all the resources mm-hmm. of the Iranian military? So they could probably ensure that there could be a revolution.
That's what I want. You know, our conversation last week when you were on with the admiral. I mean, that's, you know, my they call me a lot of names. Isolationist is one of them. But I would love to see Iranian boys and girls do the job themselves. You know.
Oh, me too, brother. Me too. Listen, there's no doubt about it. Listen, when I say, here's the deal: bombs rarely bring about regime change. But here's the crazy thing. They don't have – there's air supremacy over Iran, not superiority, supremacy. They're not even sending anything up. So the thing is, other than the missiles, and the thing is, when you've got a revolution and you don't have air support to quell these rebel armies mm-hmm. and stuff, you're going to find yourself in a world of hurt.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the fact that we flew in –
so that's where I think we're headed, yeah. And somewhere in my mind, if I were in charge of the operation, I would have took it a step further and had already been arming the Kurds, the Ottoturks, the Ottomans, and the Pashtuns and
yes.
the Dari's that are up in northwest and northeast, and let them push from the outside in and take land and watch that government collapse. There's nothing good that has ever come out of that, out of the mouths of those ayatollahs when it comes to Israel or America. And I, I'm a libertarian, but I'm not stupid enough to put my head in the sand and think that the world's problems are going to go away by pretending. Because when they sail a freighter ship into the harbor one day with a small nuclear device and detonate it in New York or in San Francisco, then people will say, what the hell was going on, right? Yeah, we should have known. And I'm just a firm believer an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yeah, I hope that ounce, though, can turn into that full cure by the people there. And you make a point, we're about to run out of time, but I mean, the fact that the, not talking about the B-2s because they're stealth, but all the other, U.S. assets that flew in ahead of them to provide cover they didn't have to fight back. They didn't get a round up. I mean, they just cruised on in.
It's crazy. You know, those aircraft are, what, 30 years old?
Yeah.
I mean, and
they're not invisible to radar. Those other aircraft, not the ones that weren't the B-2.
That's right. That's right. The B-21 is. And here's the thing, though. What does that tell you? It tells you that they had air supremacy.
Yep.
They were not worried at all. Thank you, Israel, for prepping the battlefield.
No, that's the idea that we just flew in, aircraft that did not have, that weren't hidden from radar and didn't get shot. Maybe there was a chance for the people there to turn things around. I know this, Troy. I got to get you back on the show soon to get more perspective.
I'll tell you what. I'll come down one day when I'm down here for SAVIC again, and maybe we can spend the whole day together and take calls or whatever you want to do, and we can deep dive into the world's problems.
I like it. Troy Carrico, thank you for your time. Thanks for your insight.
Welcome.
There he goes. And we're coming back to you tomorrow. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.